So we've been spending some time looking at the essential teachings of Jesus, right? And we've spent time looking at a number of things, and it's clear that there are more essential teachings than there are weeks in a sermon series. So someday we might go ahead and do a part two to this. But we've looked at forgiveness and the importance of us being able to move forward in our lives by letting things go, maybe even more so than us letting somebody off the hook. We've talked about God's unlimited love for us and how we need to get a hold of that and believe that so that we can lavish that love on others versus having litmus tests. We talked about God's intentions for us, who wants us to ask and seek and knock, knowing that God is always there for us. Now, all of these things that we're talking about over the next few weeks, last few weeks, and moving forward, is all about having a more abundant life. And who doesn't want that, to be honest? But we turn to a story where Jesus is very passionate. And that might be a clue for us that this is an essential teaching, and it corresponds with other teachings he does on the same general topic, which I don't even have time to go into today. But as we dig into this parable and this conversation that Jesus has, the first person that came to mind when I was thinking about this parable was Leona Helmsley. I know she used to live on the opposite coast, so maybe you're not as familiar, but she, along with her husband, were New York City real estate and hotel developers and owners, including a pretty swanky hotel once known as the Palace Hotel. She had a lot of money, a lot of money, but by any measure, she was not a happy person. Matter of fact, because of her demeanor, not an isolated story, not one thing, but because of a whole host of stories about her and people's run-ins with her, she was nicknamed the Queen of Mean. And there's plenty of stories to back that up, and you can still read them if you want to. Now, it may seem unfair, but as I continued to look at her life, she was convicted of tax evasion in 1985, although she was worth billions, because she was remodeling her own home, a big home, and then tried to not pay the contractors or pay them less than that they agreed to on the contract. She tried to evade that, even though she had plenty of money. But then when she finally decided she had to pay the bill because of everything going on, instead of paying it herself, she billed it as a business expense. Plenty of money. She could have paid it, no problem. But she didn't want to part with her own personal money. And during the trial, one of her housekeepers testified that she once said this: "We don't pay taxes. The little people pay taxes." Don't you want to just hang out with her? I mean, delightful. By the end of her life, she was totally isolated, but filthy rich. She was worth between $4 and $5 billion, with a B, by the time she died in 2007. But this is nothing. This is where it gets interesting. She left most of her money to a charitable trust to do good things in New York City, because she wanted to have a reputation of being a good citizen. She gave less money to individual family members, but she did leave $12 million to her dog. Wow, right? Lucky dog. She also intentionally left out certain people out of her will in her family, where she stated in her will that I'm leaving you out of the will and you know the reason why. 2 grandchildren. She wasn't leaving them anything. The will was contested, of course. Court battle ensued. In the end, the dog got less money. I mean, the dog had to live on $2 million in a trust. I mean, that's rough. Rough. but the grandchildren got $6 million each. So when I think about this whole story, do you think any of them were happier at the end of this? Well, richer, sure, but happier, who knows? I mean, except for the dog. Dogs are always happy, right? And by the way, good news, he lived his remaining years in Florida. Whew, right? I mean, isn't it interesting that Jesus has a conversation with a guy about his brother, about fighting over inheritance? Holy cow. And Jesus says something that I think all of us, regardless of our economic situation, need to be reminded of. Jesus says, watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. A person's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions or their possessions. I mean, could you imagine Jesus saying that to the family of Leona Helmsley? Or to her grandchildren who were left out of the will, who were probably already doing quite well? Or even her dog? Okay, not the dog. He'd probably pet the dog. But greed gets in the way of everything that is meaningful. Everything. Matter of fact, even Charlie Chaplin, in his great movie, The Dictator, said, greed has poisoned men's souls. It can poison your relationships the way it poisoned Leona Helmsley's relationships. It caused lapses in judgment, as we saw in that story about her. Greed will mess up your life and even poison your soul. Now, in that vein, you know, Rachel and I live in the national park. That's a picture from above the house looking down. So the first red thing is the roof of the house we're in. And living in a national park, and it gets dry in the summer, you know, when there are wildfires, we start thinking about wildfires. We had this conversation a year ago when things were happening up in Santa Rosa, tragically, now with the car fire. But we had the same conversation we had last year. We said, what would we do if we were evacuated? And it doesn't take a lot to see in the dry season that could happen. The answer was clear for both of us. We would take everything living in our house, ourselves, our pets, our two dogs, and the plants, the potted plants. Then we would leave. The only exception to that is if we had time, we'd probably take pictures, which are memories. Everything else, we can leave behind. That's what insurance is for, because for us, it's not about stuff. It's about tending to the lives that have been entrusted to us, and not just in times of trouble. Because I'm thinking about this, is that when the accumulation of stuff outweighs the value of relationships, loneliness ensues. Let me say that again. When the accumulation of stuff outweighs the value of relationships, loneliness ensues. Mother Teresa, now Saint Mother Teresa, once said this: loneliness and the feeling of being unwanted is the most terrible poverty. I mean, how sad would it be to be economically well off but actually poor when it comes to things that actually matter? It's sad. You see, when a person's life is out of balance as it relates to greed, this is what happens. A person starts to love things and use people, which is the complete opposite of what life should be about. It is clear God gives us people to love and things to use, not things to love and people to use. Now, Jesus says, look, to this man who shouts out in the crowd, look, you know, tell my brother to give me a share of the inheritance. And you could think, Jesus says, don't get caught up in greed. Be on guard against all kinds of greed. A person's value is not tied to their stuff. You would think that could be the end of the matter. You know, a person's life does not consist in the abundance of their possessions. But it's not. Jesus doesn't let it go, even though that's a great line. And I'm thinking to myself, when you think about stuff, no one is ever remembered for the things they owned. And if they are, it's about holding on to things that somebody once owned, not because of the thing, but because of the person. I mean, there's always, when you say, oh, that was my father's fill in the blank, or that was my mom's this, you don't hold on to it because of the thing, you hold on to it because of who once owned it. Oh, that's Eric and Emily's old house. They were such great people, or whatever. It's all about the memory, not about the thing. I mean, that's why I have items in my house, I'm sure most of you do, or some of you do, of things that have been passed down. It's not about the thing, it's about the memory that is caused when we think about that thing related to the person. So this brother's fighting over some share of the inheritance. Jesus responds, and if you boil it all down, Jesus is essentially saying to the guy, let it go. It's not what he wanted to hear, right? He asked Jesus, who seemed to be authoritative, to intervene. But instead, Jesus just says, let it go. I mean, you have to think, you know, at least us, not this guy. This is the answer Jesus was bound to give because he said something different to another guy just before even this happened. A guy said to him, he says, Jesus, I will follow you everywhere. And Jesus replied, well, foxes have holes, birds have nests, but the Son of Man has no place to lay his head. As if to say, I don't got any stuff, so if you're going to follow me, it's not about stuff. Not even a pillow and a sleeping bag. Not because he couldn't have one, but just because it wasn't important to him. So knowing that Jesus already said this, if you'd spend time with him, you knew the answer to this other guy about inheritance wasn't going to go well. But it wasn't the end of the matter. He wants to make sure that this guy and everybody who is listening gets what he is saying. And he goes on to tell a story. And maybe that's why I came to the point of saying, this is why it's an essential teaching. It's Jesus doesn't give a one-off answer and move on. It is so important. He stops what he is doing, gives a short answer, and then he says, I want to make sure you get it, so I'm going to tell you a parable. Not a one-off piece of advice. So Jesus goes on to tell the story about a prosperous farmer who has a bumper crop one year. Great crop. His harvest is so big that he has to build bigger barns in which to store all of his crops. It totally makes sense. It's a practical concern. It makes good business sense that if you don't have the ability or the capacity to hold on to your crops, which is money, or translated into money, you got to build bigger barns. So after he comes up with this business plan, which is very sound, by the way, he says to himself, well, you have plenty of good things laid up for many years. Take life easy, and as you know, eat, drink, and be merry. Now stop here for a second. This isn't some far-fetched parable. This isn't some agrarian thing that Jesus is talking about. It has loose connection to us. This is our story. This is us. This is a truncated version of what we all hope for. We get a well-paying job. We work hard. We make enough to put away for the future. And one day, if we are doing it right, we will have a nest egg, and we can retire, and we can do whatever the heck we want. This is our story right here. Work hard, put stuff away, relax. Well, in this guy's case, eat, drink, and be merry. I mean, this is my hope one day, is that I want to be able to save enough so that I don't have to work until my last breath. Some of you are already retired. You did that very thing. This is our story. But then, as you know, the story takes this terrible, terrible turn. God says to him, you fool. This very night, your life will be demanded from you. Then who will get what you have prepared for yourself? You know, and you go, what? You know, my first reaction is, wait, what? What? I mean, he was being financially prudent. I want to be financially prudent. I was taking care of my family. I want to take care of my family. He was taking care of his family. Is this wrong? Am I wrong? What should I be doing? Like, you really dig into it. You go, wait, isn't this what we're all trying to do? But Jesus adds, this is how it will be with anyone who stores up things for themselves but is not rich towards God. Jesus is getting at this. Our relationship with money can get in the way of the most important things. The love of God, the relationship with others. Money is a tool, but it can ruin relationships, and it can also kind of mess up our perspective on things. I mean, you already heard what Paul said to his protege, Timothy, for the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. Some people eager for money have wandered from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs. It's not money that's the problem. It's the love of money. See, the farmer was singularly focused on one thing, taking care of numero uno. He finally could do all the things he never had time to do, time to settle down, time to kick back, time to enjoy the finer things in life. That's where he's at. But he missed one thing in his profit and loss statements. One thing that he overlooked in his long-term forecast. One thing he didn't take into account. Time. He didn't see that until it was too late. And often, neither do we. Time is more precious than a large 401k. Now, we don't see the value of time until our time is short or nearly gone. I mean, you've heard me say, no one ever gets to the end of their life and wish they had gotten yet another degree or a larger car or this or that. They don't talk about those things at the end of their life. If there are regrets, it's how they treated people and how they used their time. Now, the good news is the Lord of heaven and earth does not want us to have any regrets. And that's why he uses such strong language to get our attention when God says, you fool. I mean, if you read the Gospels, you see that Jesus is not necessarily prone to name-calling a whole lot. There's only a couple of places. But it is more than the end-of-life kind of stuff here. This is a reminder of what we should be about today. So in this story, God calls the man who saved for retirement a fool for our benefit because he was singularly focused to get our attention so that we may look up, so that we don't suffer the same fate or label as that farmer at the end of our lives. Jesus reminds us, don't be single-mindedly focused, only engaged in careers or stuff or even nest eggs. They have their place. The mindset of a fool will discover that they invested themselves in the wrong things. So the question is, what is important to God? You are. God cares so much about each and every one of us that he paid a steep price. A ransom, not paid in dollars, but in the blood of Jesus. Jesus didn't just invest in us, he gave everything. People come first in God's reign. So Jesus reminds us today in this essential teaching to look up from the things that preoccupy our minds so that we may see the same thing. Amen.